calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. The Tom Hartman Radio Program, moving toward a bright and sparkling future by returning democracy to the United States of America. Do only the little people have to pay income taxes? Lead story on the front page of the Wall Street Journal today we'll be getting into in the second hour of our program, along with a few other issues. A fascinating new program they have down in Brazil. It has to do with men and guns and supermodels. I'll tell you about that. Lots coming up today. But first, Congressman Bernie Sanders is with us. Congressman Sanders?
How are you, Tom?
Hey, Bernie. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. I had to verify that because I knew that they were just getting you there at the last minute. Congressman Bernie Sanders, the longest-serving independent in the House of Representatives, independent member of the House of Representatives. He's running for Congress, right, for the Senate, the United States Senate right now. Bernie.org, his website. And our telephone number, if you'd like to call and speak with Bernie during our Brunch with Bernie segment here, 866-440-8466, 866-440-THOM. Drop by our live chat room at TomHartman.com. And, Bernie, it's been a wild week for you guys.
It has been a very wild week. I got out of Washington when the Congress adjourned at about 6 o'clock in the morning on Sunday night, so I was able to get out Monday night, but the Senate is, I think, still in there, or just as perhaps left. And in the middle of all of this, House and Senate conference report negotiations and so forth and so on, a whole lot has happened. I think, Tom, one of the more outrageous things that has happened, and maybe I say that because I come from a cold weather state, but in the midst of all of these negotiations, in the midst of all of the discussion of family values and concern about people and compassionate conservatism, the Republican leadership, led in this case by Senator Stevens, Ted Stevens of Alaska, who was upset because the Senate did the right thing and did not go along with drilling in Alaska to benefit the oil companies. He punished lower-income people all over America by withdrawing $2 billion from the LIHEAP program, which is Low-Income Heating Assistance Program, which helps millions of lower-income people, including many seniors, keep warm in the wintertime. So now, because of that withdrawal of that $2 billion, plus another 1% across-the-board cut, if you could believe it, that at a time when home heating fuels are soaring, there is actually less money in the LIHEAP fund today than there was last year. And that just seems to be incredibly vindictive. And just, you know, as we enter this holiday season, just an outrage. And it's something that we are going to work on and try to once again bring funding back into. But to cut back $2 billion and lower funding at a time when home heating fuel is soaring is grotesque and unacceptable.
Isn't Senator Ted Stevens, Bernie, shooting himself in the foot? I mean, there are low-income people in Alaska as
sure
well.
Sure there are. But, you know,
and it's a cold weather state.
Who has made it his life mission to see that there be oil exploration in ANWA, and he was PO'd that he couldn't get what he wanted, and therefore the Republican leadership is fine. The heck with you, and we're going to cut it back. It's just incredible. And then in other legislation, that was, interestingly enough, without going into it, that was part of the defense appropriations bill. You might ask why ANWR is in the defense appropriations bill, but that's a whole other discussion. But on top of that, in the budget reconciliation, children's health insurance program cuts, and this is at a time when poverty in America is increasing, at a time when obviously more and more people are losing their health insurance. The cutback on Medicaid is beyond comprehension. Cutbacks in Medicare, cutbacks in student loans. You talk to any middle-class family today that has a kid who is in college or going to go to college, and they're saying, we don't know how we're going to afford it. So the Republican leadership response is to cut back on student loans, make college education even more affordable. And, Tom, if you want to, I mean, people almost, I mean, find this thing so incomprehensible. And then when these guys come back in February, you know what one of the first issues that they will be dealing with?
Let me guess. Tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires.
Well, not quite cuts, but tax breaks. Right, tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires. So you cut Medicaid, you cut Medicare, you cut back on LIHEAP, fuel assistance for lower-income people, cut back on college loans for the middle class, and the first order of business when Congress reconvenes is even more tax breaks for the wealthiest people in this country. It is, I mean, you know, I think some people have it literally, not only disagree with it, they really have a hard time believing it. But this is where the Republican leadership is coming from.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. We are broadcasting live. It's the Friday before the Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa holiday, and for the pagans out there, the Yule holiday as well, before the holiday season. So feel free to give us a call at 866-440-8466, talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
100% political effort, and that is they wanted to make it harder. If you put Anwar in defense appropriations, then what you can do is run a 30-second ad and say, see, this person, Congressman X, Congressman Y, voted against our troops.
Mm.
And, you know, it's the old political trick. But a number of us did vote against that precisely because of Anwar's presence in that. And the Senate had the courage to stand up and say, you are, in fact, insulting our troops by tagging, making this whole issue so very political, and by dumping Anwar into it. So I applaud the members of the Senate who had the courage to stand up to Ted Stevens and do the right thing.
At the same time now, we have this whole scandal exploding, I guess, around Bush being the first president apparently in the history of the United States to just completely go around the Fourth Amendment and spy on people inside the United States of America without obtaining a warrant first.
Right.
And not just admitting it, but Dick Cheney out, you know, proudly proclaiming it, saying they're trying to get back the presidential power that Nixon gave up.
Well, you know, what these guys do, and everybody should understand, and I think people who observe this White House do understand it, they never apologize. They're the only people in the world who never do anything wrong. Isn't it nice that on this planet we have found a group of people who never do anything wrong?
Final. Infallibility.
Thank God. We have found an infallible group of human beings. They happen to be located at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And, geez, these guys never, ever do anything wrong. So their strategy is, when caught with their fingers in the hands in the cookie jar, when the New York Times, this is a whole other story, Tom, as you know, the New York Times withheld the story for an entire year.
Yeah, and why?
Well,
I mean, because a year ago was an election going on. This could have been the story that could have made John Kerry for sure be elected.
Right. So you have, I mean, the New York Times, and apparently, is if my memory is correct now, Bush had brought the New York Times people to the White House a week or so before the story made the front page of the New York Times.
Yeah, and tried to talk him out of
running.
Tried
to talk him out of it. Yeah. So here you have a situation where the President of the United States is using the NSA to spy on our telephone calls as well as our emails, okay, without going to a court. I have joined many members of Congress, and I'm happy to say, you know, Republicans are very concerned about this as well. So you have people from both political parties, plus me as an independent, who are saying we need to investigate this thoroughly. And I'll tell you something, interestingly enough, this revelation about another abrogation of constitutional rights, I think had an impact on the whole debate on the USA Patriot Act. And in that debate, as I think many listeners know, people like Senator Feingold played an outstanding role, Senator Leahy from the state of Vermont.
Well, you were one of the guys who really started the ball.
We started this thing off a long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we managed to get an amendment passed, which is also obviously key to this whole discussion, on Section 215, and that is the libraries and bookstore provision, so which is still being debated right now. But, you know, here's the president telling us, oh, don't worry about, you guys are worried about the USA Patriot, you don't have to worry about constitutional rights, civil liberties, trust us, we're not going to do anything wrong. Then in the middle of this whole debate comes out the fact that they are wiretapping phones and emails without going to court. Then what the vice president says, hey, yeah, that's right. We need a word robust. I don't know who came up with this word. They use it all of the time. Robust.
They must have focus tested it over at Frank Luntz's place.
We need it sounds masculine, right?
Yeah.
He's a masculine. We need a masculine president here who's going to protect us. And we really don't have to worry about the constitutional little things like war and so forth and so on. So Interesting times.
Yeah, very much so. We're speaking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. If you'd like to speak with Congressman Sanders, our telephone number, 866-440-8466, 866-440-THOM. And we'll put you on the air. It's 16 minutes past the hour, the day before the holiday weekend here. Friday, I'm Tom Harbin. We'll be right back.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
On the first day of Bushmas, my Supreme Court gave to me a duly selected presidency. On the second day of Bushmas, my president gave to me $300. Remember? Instead of a democracy. On the third day of Bushmas, my president gave to me no Kyoto Protocol, so I could warm up to a check for $300 instead of a democracy. On the fourth day of Bushmas, my president gave to me space missile defense in order to form a more perfect union, or at least a warm, fuzzy feeling of warming up to having no democracy.
And welcome back, my friends. 22 minutes past the hour. Tom Harbin here with you. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. And, in fact, Bernie, that $300 that Bush was giving out was originally, you were suggesting that instead of tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires as a way to stimulate the economy.
That's right.
What was your idea?
What felt is that if you wanted to give tax breaks, obviously the tax breaks should be targeted to the middle class. And we came up with the idea of a rebate so that, yeah, we'll give Mr. Gates his $300, but I think it'll mean a lot more to a working class family, and obviously it will save the government huge sums of money because they're not going to give away giant tax breaks to the wealthiest people in this country. So we came up with the idea, and some other Democrats came up with it, and lo and behold, Bush announced it, so I was pretty surprised by that.
Yeah, well, that's how they made basically the tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires palatable by stealing your idea.
These guys talk about whatever the president is on. He talks about the benefits of any program to go to the middle class, but he forgets to tell you that the bulk of the benefits always go to the very, very wealthy.
Yeah. Our telephone number 1-866-440-8466. We're live. It's Friday, the day before the Christmas, Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, holiday season, and Yule, if you're a pagan there. Louie in Orlando, Florida. Hey, Louie, welcome to the program.
Oh, Congressman Sanders, I've been to Vermont many times. I have an uncle in Marlboro and another one in Putney, and it's a beautiful state, and you're a great guy, and thank God you are in Congress.
Thanks very much, Louie.
Hey, Louie, check out Bernie.org if you want to make good on your support of Bernie.
I will, because, I've debated. I'm a union vice president here in Orlando. I'm a working union guy. I put a 60-hour week in for Bell South, where I'm a technician, and I volunteer my services because I love the union movement. So this strike got me so upset in New York in the fact that you had people like Bloomberg saying, oh, the union's hurting the poor people. Well, number one, we want to organize the poor people. Number two, the union guys, they painted some guy driving a Rolls and smoking a big fatty when we're all working volunteers. I get no salary. I do this out of the love of the movement.
Louis, the union movement historically and today, and of course the media doesn't talk about it very much, the union movement is probably the single most important force for having protected the middle class for the last many, many years. The union movement has helped give us a 40-hour work week. It's given us Medicaid. It's given us Medicare. It's given us affordable housing. It's given us Social Security. So I think millions and millions of Americans are deeply in debt to what you do and what the trade union movement is all about.
Thank you. And we also are working to change. I realize that there is the stereotype that we're the dinosaur representing, you know, old-fashioned industrial base that is decimated because of Republican policies in trade, which I disagree with NAFTA and anything else, but that's for another show. But we're working, to organize, you know, other groups now. And we just had a successful campaign here in Orlando. We got 1,400 members of Singular Wireless to join the union. So
fantastic.
We are making inroads.
I think any sensible person understands especially in this day and age of globalization, working people need to negotiate contracts. They can't be in a position of being forced to take it or leave it. Certainly, we have been losing this these trade votes, but the unions have been very strong in saying, no, it is not acceptable that corporate America throw American workers out on the street and move to China, move to Mexico, where people are paid pennies an hour. So keep up the good work, Louis.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Louis, for that call. Jay in Atlanta, Georgia, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Hey, the more I pay attention to this spy scam, like the Washington Post by Daschle today, and the judge resigning, which to me proves that, you know, has anyone asked the question, hey, Bush, what's the difference between when we need to go to FISA and when you don't need to go to FISA under your book? And my bigger point is, I mean, it's like he just came out and said, yes, I broke the law. So how does that not create an instant and serious leadership vacuum that we should all be worried about? How do we address it?
Well, the first thing we have to do, I think, is do a thorough investigation of this. Bush is going to argue incredibly. I mean, I think he has no legal grounds to stand on, that the vote giving him authorization to go to war gave him the right to do this. I think that is a very, very weak argument, but we need to have that argument. And one of the issues that every American should be concerned about is one of the constitutional responsibilities of Congress is oversight. When Clinton was president, I'm on the committee that does this. Every week there was another investigation of all of the terrible things alleged against Clinton. Since Bush has been president, think about all that has happened, whether it's Iraq, whether it's the Medicare prescription drug program, whether it is constitutional rights. There has not been one serious hearing looking at the Bush administration. And we've got to demand that that takes place.
Well said. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. Bernie.org is website, Bernie.org. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment every week, our starting program here on the beginning of this day. Our Brunch with Bernie segment, our telephone number toll-free across the United States, 866-440-8466. Drop by our live chat room at TomHartman.com. 27 minutes past the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Happy holidays to you. 34 minutes past the hour, coming up on 25 minutes before the hour, the place where progressives fiendishly plot for clean elections, a democracy, Social Security, clean environment. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Bernie.org, his website. Congressman Bernie Sanders, the longest-serving independent in the House of Representatives, currently running for the Senate. You can find out all about that over at Bernie.org as well. If you want to drop into our live chat room, it's TomHartman.com. However you spell it, we'll get you there, although it's T-H-O-M, Hartman with two N's. And our telephone number, 866-440-8466. Annie in Olympia, Washington, you are live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Hi there, Congressman Sanders. I'm fortunate enough to listen to this program quite often. It's my morning at home. And, you know, I'm conscious of a lot that's going on. I pay a lot of attention. I read a lot. And one of the things that's happening is that there is so much going on that sometimes it's hard to know where, you know, where there's an important thread and where there's just a lot of activity. And their legitimate activity, I'm not trying to diminish, you know, whether, you know, to prioritize things, but it seems like sometimes there's the right thread to pull. And one of the issues that I had read about back when Roberts was nominated for the Supreme Court was that the thing to be looking at with the Supreme Court nominees is their relationship to the concept of executive privilege, that much of the thrust right now in the mindset of the current administration and the folks that are in power is the ability to have more control over the right of the executive to act on their own authority.
Right.
And that seems to me, you know, that as things have come into play, and thank goodness for Patrick Fitzgerald and the attention that he's put on the role of the courts to manage some of the problems that as citizens, I think we feel out of control of. So can you speak a little
sure.
bit to that and this whole business with Scalito, or I mean Alito, and, you know.
You're raising a very good question.
Thank you.
That is, and I think even some Republicans are beginning to understand it. When you have, as we currently do, a right-wing Republican president and right-wing Republican leadership in the House and the Senate, what has happened is the House and the Senate have increasingly become rubber stamps for the White House. They haven't exercised their constitutional, in my view, their constitutional responsibilities. The White House says jump, these guys jump. And now, with the recent revelation that the president has used the NSA to eavesdrop both on phones and emails, what the vice president is saying, well, that's good. We need even more authority because we're at war. And by the way, we're always going to be at war because the war against terrorism is never ending. So your point is that what is taking place in this country is a weakening of democracy, weakening of the authority of Congress, more secrecy and more power in the White House. And that, for those of us who believe in democracy, the right of the people through their elected officials to make the decisions guiding our country, that is a huge issue and something that we have got to be very, very mindful of.
We don't elect kings here.
We don't elect kings. We elect people who are servants of the public.
Scott in San Francisco, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Hi, good to talk to you. I've been losing sleep over this for the past month, and I thought everybody else should too. The Stephen Jones, the Stephen Jones report that came out from Brigham Young about unanswered questions with the physics of the tower collapses, and Bush is constantly going back to this 9/11 to justify everything that he does. Yet we still don't know what happened. And I just was fishing around last night, and I caught this this article on Counterpunch that that says that the they've always claimed that they didn't have the black boxes from the two planes, what, Flight 11 and Flight 175, that hit the towers. And now they're saying that they do have the black boxes and that the FBI told the 9/11 Commission that they didn't have the black boxes.
Yeah, I have to say, Scott, I haven't, that's been sent to me by a number of people. And
it's on Counterpunch.
Right, I know.
December 19th.
Right, and Counterpunch is, you know, a website that, you know, sometimes has some, you know, really breaks news, and sometimes they break conspiracy theories. I have not seen that verified in any left-wing mainstream media.
Yeah, I have seen a little bit of this. I think we are into conspiracy theory. I happen not to accept that whole premise. I think that 9/11 was an attack by fundamentalists against the United States, and I think that's what the evidence indicates.
1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Janice in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. You're live with Bernie Sanders.
Hi, happy holidays to both of you and everyone out there. And I was just wondering, Congressman Sanders, is it true that the drilling that we're doing in Alaska already, that oil goes to Japan?
Oh, Janice, that is a good question, and I honestly don't know the answer to that. There's no question that at some point we were, in the midst of an oil shortage in the United States, we were exporting oil to Asia, whether we are doing it now. Tom, do you know that?
My understanding, Bernie, is that the pipeline capacity from Alaska to the northwestern in the United States to Seattle or, you know, Washington State, Oregon and whatnot, that pipeline has a capacity of 1 million barrels a day, and that no amount of drilling in Alaska is going to change the capacity of that pipeline, and there are no plans to change the capacity of that pipeline. So if they increase, and there's certainly enough oil in Alaska right now to keep that pipeline full for decades to come. So if they increase the amount of oil that's being drilled up there by opening up ANWR, I've seen several reports in mainstream media that they've already lined up buyers in Japan. Yeah, that's what Janice is referring to.
Okay, I don't know anything more than that, Janice.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Janice. Sammy in Detroit, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Hi, two quick questions before my phone shuts off. Know about the Pentagon spying on Americans, and can you explain what would need access to our medical records? I'm going to hang up and listen on the air, on the radio.
Okay. Thank you,
Sammy.
It was breaking up. I think she was saying, can you explain why this administration says that they need access to our medical records, and why are they spying on Americans without warrants?
Well, I can't tell you why. I think it's a very bad idea, and we're going to do everything we can to stop it. I mean, I think these guys think the fact that we are in a war in Iraq gives them the authority to do almost anything that they want, which in their judgment is going to protect the American people. In that process, they have forgotten about a document called the U.S. Constitution, which gives the American people a number of rights against the government. Government can't intrude on one's personal life in many respects. We have freedom of assembly. We have freedom of speech. We have a number of freedoms. And apparently this president doesn't put a particularly high priority or show a lot of respect for those rights. So the answer is they think they can do it because we are in war. But many of us believe that we can and must protect the American people, but do it in a way that preserves our Constitution. So we have a slight disagreement with the president on that.
Jerry in Olympia, Washington, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Bernie, a quick question on the point you were making on corporations shipping our jobs out of the country. Is there some sort of a legislative, rules for behavior for corporations that we, I know there's the Sherman Antitrust Act, but these guys are out there saying they want to be part of this global economy. They're doing it under the protection of the American flag with our tax dollars, our military, the U.S.'s stature in the world, and yet they turn around and thumb their noses at its citizens.
Yes.
And this doesn't seem right to me. They all have charters. Can we pull charters? What can we do to penalize
I mean, what is going on is an outrage. It should be seen as a real war against the middle class and working families of these countries, of our country. What happened is 20 or 30 years ago, these guys got the bright idea that they don't and shouldn't have to pay American workers a living wage, protect the environment, provide benefits, when they can go to third world countries where people are desperate and will work for pennies an hour. So they pushed and put a huge amount of campaign of finances into making Congress support NAFTA, permanent normal trade relations with China, the World Trade Organization, all of these trade agreements. And then what they told us at the time was, gee, look, it's going to open up the whole global economy to American exports. Well, many of us didn't believe it then, and what history has shown is that this unfettered free trade policy has been an absolute disaster for the middle class and working families of our country. In my small state of Vermont, in the last 5 years or so, we have lost 20% of our manufacturing jobs. Similar statistics exist all over this country. Companies are thumbing their nose at their workers, at consumers in this country, and they're saying, we are going to China. We're going to pay people there 30 cents an hour, 50 cents an hour. We're going to take information technology jobs, computer jobs, to India. We're going to Mexico. We're going any place that we can, and to heck with the American people. So what's happening now is General Motors just announced that you, who used to be the largest employer in America, good-paying jobs, good benefits, they're laying off 30,000 people. They're in serious financial trouble. And Walmart, which has just been fined the other day for not even allowing people to take a lunch break, low wages, minimal benefits, they are now the largest employer in America. That's the trend in America. That's directly related to our disastrous trade policies, which we must reverse.
Yeah, and this all began with the so-called Reagan Revolution, in a big way, in my opinion. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's Brunch with Bernie on the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 45 minutes past the hour. Telephone number 866-440-8466. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I pulled into Nazareth, was feeling about half past dead. I just need some place where I can lay my head.
Welcome back, my friends.
Hey, sister, can you tell me where a man might find a bed? He just grinned and shook my hand.
Indeed, 9 minutes before the hour, Welcome back. We need to take a load off the working class in America. Give them back their reasonable pay and dignity and wages. And, well, that's a whole other rant for another time. It is our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Our number, 1-866-440-THOM, our telephone number. And Diana in San Rosa Beach, Florida on the line. Hey, Diana.
Hi, how are you?
Great. You are live with Congressman Sanders.
You're wonderful, and Bernie Sanders is wonderful, and I look forward to Fridays.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lena.
I looked up the Presidential Oath of Office as written in the Constitution, Article 2, Section 1, and it says that the president will, to the best of his ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, not the people, the Constitution of the United States. And when he violated the Fourth Amendment, there should be impeachment proceedings. He violated his oath.
Okay, well, I think at the very least, what some of us want to do is get to the root cause of what is going on. What is going on with the wiretapping of our phones and our emails, and also the other actions that this president has taken, which appear to me to be violating our constitutional rights. To my mind, impeachment at this particular moment is not particularly smart from a political perspective. The Republican Party controls the House and the Senate. This guy is not going to be impeached. If he ever was impeached, Dick Cheney would become president of the United States. Cheney was ever impeached, and he has to would become president of the United States. Not a great advance, not a great step forward. The real political issue, in my view, Diana, that we have got to focus on is regaining control of the House of Representatives and of the United States Senate. And let me tell you something. One of the reasons that the Republicans are so nervous about the possibility of that happening is that I suspect the first day that a Democratic House or Senate has power, you're going to start see committees start asking the kinds of questions that nobody has asked in the last 5 years. Maybe Mr. Roe will be coming for before the appropriate committee under oath to start answering some questions. So I think the immediate political task right now is to educate, is to organize, and to make sure that we take political power away from the Republican Party in both the House and the Senate.
Yeah, we have an election coming in 11 months. Speaking of which, Tim in Peoria, Illinois, has a question for you. Bernie Sanders, Tim, you're live with Congressman Sanders.
Hi, Tom and Bernie.
Hi, Tim.
Bernie for Senate.
Thanks very much.
Bernie, it's critical for progressives to gain House and Senate seats in 2006. My question is, do you think it's better to try to explain the policy differences between progressives and right-wingers, or do you believe that that discussion is too much for the average voter to absorb, and thus a simpler type of, for lack of a better way to describe it, reptilian brain-focused campaign would be more effective?
No, I certainly don't believe in the latter. I think what we are dealing with is not only a media, a corporately controlled media, which refuses to focus on the real issues facing the American people, but you're also dealing with a right-wing Republican Party, which is very, very intelligent and effective in splitting people up based on, because they focus on issues like gay rights, abortion, guns, and so forth and so on. Tim, what I think we have got to do is go to working people and say, tell me, how are your wages and your income doing? Oh, they're worse under Bush. How's your health care situation doing? Well, I'm paying more or I lost my health insurance. What about your pensions? Oh, gee, they're threatening to take away my pensions. What about the ability of your kid to go to college? Well, it's becoming less and less affordable. What about the environment? Oh, no, no, we're getting more pollution. I think what we have got to do is focus on the real lives of people, ask them what is happening in their lives, and if they just start thinking about that, they will reach the conclusion that this president is working day and night for the wealthy and the powerful and the largest corporations, ignoring the needs of the middle class, senior citizens, low-income people. Remember, poverty has increased by over 5 million since Bush is president. Over 6 million people have lost their health insurance. Health care costs are soaring. Pensions are being lost. These guys wanted to destroy Social Security. They're cutting back on Medicaid, cutting back on LIHEAP. I think if we get that information out to the ordinary American, people will be saying enough is enough. It's time for a change. We can't allow the Republican Party to continue to control the government of the United States.
You know, there are days, Bernie, when I think you're the reincarnation of Franklin Roosevelt.
Well,
I just have to say.
Well, there are a lot of folks out there, and you'd be surprised, Tom. One of the, you know, because of the nature of the media, there are dozens of good members of Congress, a small minority, I grant, who are working day and night for the needs of working people. What they do, unfortunately, doesn't quite make it to NBC or CBS, but they are working hard.
Yeah, in fact, we had Peter DeFazio here in Oregon.
Peter is certainly one of those people.
For example, yeah. And we just have a few seconds left, so rather than toss in another caller, because there just won't be time for it. Bernie, what do you see as the big issue coming up here?
I believe, this is my own view, it's the collapse of the middle class. It is the fact that despite a huge increase in worker output, we are more productive as a people. Technology is exploding. The question that every working American has got to ask, that in the midst of all of that, why is the middle class shrinking, poverty increasing, and the gap between the rich and the poor now at an outrageous level? That is the issue to me.
And I think that's the issue to most of America, and we just have to communicate that.
That's
and you're
right.
doing such a marvelous job of it in Congress. Bernie.org, the website. Congressman Bernie Sanders, thanks again for being with us, Bernie.
My pleasure, Tom, and happy holidays to everybody.
Thank you, and happy holidays to you and your wife and family as well. Great talking with you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank. In the next hour, we're going to be getting into this latest twist. This is amazing. It's the Leona Helmsley story all over again. You're not going to believe it. We'll be back.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Fair and slightly unbalanced. Tom Hartman here with you. No, I'll own up to it. I'll tell you. I have a bias. I've got a take on these issues. There's probably nothing that I don't have a take on or an opinion on, and proud of it. 1-866-440-8466, our phone number, tomhartman.com, T-H-O-M, Hartman with two N's, but however you spell it, we'll get you there. Drop into our live chat room if you'd like, participate in our message blog, click on Articles on Democracy to read my various written rants. Leona Helmsley, you may recall, many years ago, must have been, nearly a decade ago, it seems, Leona Helmsley, the wife of Harry Helmsley, the real estate tycoon in New York City, New York State as well. Harry Helmsley, sort of like Donald Trump, you know, inherited some real estate from his father and then built it into an empire. Donald Trump actually was born a millionaire. I believe Harry Helmsley pretty much made his from less than that. May be wrong. In any case, Leona marries him. She's got all this money. And she's, you know, living high on the hog and having the company pay her expenses. And the company's paying for, you know, where she lives and her vacations and her trips and this, that, and the other thing. And somebody comes along and says, Leona, shouldn't you be paying taxes on that stuff? Aren't those personal expenses? And she says, only the little people pay taxes. And that quote came back to haunt her. I mean, she became portrayed as what was that woman's name in the 101 Dalmatians? I'm forgetting, but Cruella. What was that, Alex?
Cruella De Vil.
Ah, yes, Cruella De Vil. There you go. Poor Leona Helmsley. I mean, you know, maybe she's a sweet person. Who knows? Although from the stories being told by her employees, not so much the case. But nonetheless, she got nailed and went to jail, as I recall, for not paying taxes on these personal expenses. So here today, on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, the latest twist in corporate pay, tax-free income for executives. In fact, Patrick McGurn, an executive vice president of Institutional Shareholder Services, Inc., writes Mark Marimont in today's Wall Street Journal, says, this smacks of Leona Helmsley-like treatment that only little people pay taxes. What am I talking about? Well, right here, I'll just, the first couple sentences from the Wall Street Journal story really tell it well. Mark Marmont, good way with words here. Like most Americans, rank-and-file employees of Home Depot Incorporated must reach into their own pockets to pay taxes. But not Robert Nardelli, the home improvement retailer's chief executive. Under his employment contract, Home Depot picks up a big chunk of his federal and state income taxes. Now, it's not on his pay that they're paying the taxes. It's on all the perks, all those things that Leona Helmsley was using. Specifically, high-end car, his family's trip on the company jet, a $10 million loan that the company gave to him and then said, you don't have to pay that back. You can just keep it. That kind of stuff. Last year, these payments, writes Marmont in the Wall Street Journal, amounted to at least $3.3 million. Now, that's more than this guy's $2 million salary. In fact, it's really quite amazing. These are called gross-ups, as in they're increasing the gross take of the CEO. And Art Myers, an attorney with Edwards, Angel, Palmer, and Dodge, LLP in Boston, says gross-ups are disguised compensation. And the funny thing is they actually kind of create a circle. I mean, you know, for example, say you get, you got $1 million on the company yacht worth of travel with you and your family and your wife's family and your parents and everybody, and all is $1 million, okay? And the tax you should pay on that, let's say at 35%, would be $350,000. So the company pays the $350,000. Now what's happened is the company has, in effect, given you a $350,000 gift. On that $350,000 gift now, the company owes 35%. And I can't do math fast enough to tell you what that is, but 3 times 3, 6, 7, that'd be maybe, say, $70,000. So the company gives you another $70,000. Now the company owes you 35% on that $70,000. So what, 21? So now they owe $21,000 in tax. So they give you $21,000, and now on that $21,000, they owe 35%, which is another $6,000, and so then they give you the $6,000. And when it's like this, well, here, as the Wall Street Journal notes, in an effort to shield executives from any tax bite on their pay, gross-ups can quickly spiral into huge sums. When a company reimburses executives for their tax payments, that creates new taxable compensation. The company then has to cover taxes on that new amount, which creates yet more taxable pay, and so on. The spiral ends when the ever-increasing or ever-decreasing amount of new income reaches zero or close to it. The bottom line, grossing up an executive groping effect. Yeah. Grossing, I'm not even going to go there. I will be telling you an amazing story about supermodels and guns in a minute. But anyway, grossing up an executive for taxes on $1 million can, and the comment will not sound quite so sexist when I tell you the whole story. Anyhow, grossing up an executive for taxes on $1 million can easily cost an additional $700,000 to $900,000, writes the Wall Street Journal. In some instances, gross-up reimbursements can be more than double the covered pay. They looked at the companies doing this. 52% of the 100 largest companies in the United States, according to the compensation research firm Equilar, Inc., 52% of the top 100 companies, and there's 52 out of 100 of the largest companies in the United States, they're doing this. Whereas back in 2002, only 38 out of that 100 did this. This is a relatively recent thing. In fact, if you look at the thousand largest public companies that are tracked by Towers Perrin, which is another compensation consulting firm, this last year, 77% of them offered excise tax gross-ups on their change in control plans last year. That's 770 out of 1,000 companies are saying, Texas are only for the little people, not for our executives. They're part of the new royalty in America. In 1999, it was 55%, 550 of them. In 1987, it was only 100 of them, only 10%. So what we've seen here, again, the predictable consequences of the greed is good. If you make your money with money, if you're into arbitrage, if you make your money by using other people's money or using your own money, and you make your money, you know, white collar crime is different from blue collar crime. We have two completely different tax systems. The whole bottom line of this whole thing, the predictable outcome of the Reagan revolution and this bizarre mindset, is that we now have a caste system in the United States. There is the working poor caste, which is about a quarter of all workers in America, are literally in the range of the poverty level. There is the working caste, which is, you know, probably a little more than the other three quarters. And then there's that top 1% or so, the top 0.1% who make more than $1.5 million a year, the top 1% making more than a couple $100,000 a year, who are doing quite well, thank you very much. And the top 0.0001%, the top, I believe it is the top 14,000 people in the United States, might be 11,000, something like that, who are making, you know, well over $1.5 million a year, every year. And basically it's become a new aristocracy, and it is rapidly becoming an hereditary aristocracy. Over 40% of the people in the richest people on the Fortune 400 richest people in America obtain their wealth by inheriting it. So we got a problem here in the United States, a serious problem. 1-866. Oh, by the way, our quote for the day. This is just perfect. From Thomas Jefferson. First, I have to explain to you. A plowman is the old word for farmer, and a yeoman is the old word for somebody who labors, you know, a factory worker. Thomas Jefferson. The country is headed toward a single and splendid government of an aristocracy founded on banking institutions and moneyed corporations. And if this tendency continues, it will be the end of freedom and democracy. The few will be ruling and riding over the plundered plowmen and the beggared yeomanry. Thomas Jefferson. I'm telling you, this is a battle that has been going on for a long, long, long time. And it's continuing. It is absolutely continuing. We are seeing the rise of aristocracy in the United States like nothing we've ever seen before. Coming up in the next segment, we'll be taking your calls. And also, I've got to tell you about this incredible deal down in Brazil, where some supermodels and some actresses got together and decided to use male sexual insecurity to bring guns off the street. Believe it or not. It's incredible. It's an amazing story. That and more. I hear it here on the Tom Hartman radio program, the place where smart people get their news. It's 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Yes, indeed, my friends. Happy holidays in the Darwinian world of ideas. We're at the top of the food chain. Welcome back to our program. Tom Hartman here with you. The No Boring Zone. Our toll-free number, 866-440-8466-440-THOM. David in Blaine, Washington on the line. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I love your show. I tell everybody about it.
Well, thank you.
Homeland Security controls FEMA, and we're given advanced warning of an attack by Mother Nature, hence Katrina. And the Bush-Cheney cabal claims will be attacked by a boogeyman terrorist if the Patriot Act isn't renewed and made permanent. And this is the same 4,000-page Patriot Act in which members of Congress were given next to no time to read it.
Yeah, it was 400, not 4,000.
400,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
And passed under the cover.
Same difference if you're given 24 hours to read the thing.
Yeah. So to predict a terrorist attack is like trying to find a needle in a haystack, and yet we have satellites to prepare, you know, for... a devastating storm. I mean, what if the volcanoes decide to all awaken all at the same time on the West Coast? What
are we God forbid.
You know what I mean?
I'm sitting here 40, 50 miles from one. David, and so are you, by the way, and Blaine.
Yes.
The problem, David, is you're being logical. I'm sorry. It's just it doesn't work in Bush world.
And so they're abusing their power. They're abusing their position. They're not representing the people. And like you were saying earlier the congressman there, that, you know, they just care about lining their pockets and protecting
their
corporate
that's
money.
That's really very much the bottom line. David, thanks for the call and for pointing out the hypocrisy of it all. You're welcome. And happy holidays to you and your family. And the same to you, Joy in Cincinnati, Ohio. Hey, Joy.
I just like to make two quick comments.
Sure.
I'm a little nervous. I heard this man on C-SPAN say that Bush had accomplished most of what he set out to do. Unfortunately, he has, and it's not good for the country. And
well
I'd like
said.
To say it's quite obvious that, you know, why Bush don't want to go to the courts before he wiretaps. It's because he knows he's doing something that he shouldn't be doing.
Yeah, I'm wondering if he's wiretapping John Kerry.
I think that's true. And they asked John Kerry that, and he said, well, he didn't know, you know.
Yeah.
It should be, they need to check it.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely there's something that he shouldn't be doing. Otherwise, why wouldn't he go? And also, he has time to go after, and he doesn't even go after. And I watched that clip where he was saying, you know, that he was doing it while he was saying that it's, you know, that's what you should do.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's interesting to watch that clip on MSNBC that he was saying you should go and get the approval. At the same time, he was doing it without approval. So I hope he gets impeached, but with that Congress, you know, I doubt it will happen.
Yeah.
But he's the worst president this country's ever seen, for sure.
I agree with you, Jay.
Thanks for letting me know.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Happy holidays to you, too. Thank you very much for calling. Dale in Everett, Washington. Hey, Dale, welcome to the program. Happy holidays to you.
And to you, too, as well, Tom. Thanks for having me on. I was just calling. I just found it interesting listening to your description of the CEO pay and the way that they're disguising covering up tax payments and whatnot. And listening to you, it sounds to me, with that rollover scheme that you described, that they're actually paying extra taxes that if they had just paid these people the money directly with enough money to pay their own taxes.
Right, then it actually would have cost the corporation less. And in fact, one of the things that they get into in this Wall Street Journal article today, and it's really fascinating, it's a cover story on the Wall Street Journal, is that it's all fairly well hidden. In fact, quoting from the story, details of the little-known payments called gross-ups are often tax gross-ups are often buried in impenetrable footnotes or obscure filings.
And that seems to be the entire point of the operation is to disguise these extra.
Sure.
This extra
yeah. And it goes on to say, for these top executives, however, companies are removing taxes from the list of inevitable life experiences, leaving only death.
Yeah. So they're making so much money and they feel so guilty about it that they don't want anybody to know about the extra money that they're making, and they're willing to pay extra taxes to keep it a secret.
Yeah. We so much need to go back to the kind of taxation system that we had in the United States from 1935 until Ronald Reagan came into office, until I believe it was 82 when he finally chopped that thing down. Well, Kennedy took it down to 70%, where you know, if you make in today's dollars, I mean, converting Eisenhower's dollars into today's dollars, if you make, you know, 50, 60, 80,000 bucks a year, you're paying 20% more or less tax rate. And these aren't exact numbers, but they're in ballpark, and they're pretty close. If you're making 100, 150, 200,000, you're paying around 30, 35%. You start making around $400,000, $500,000 in today's dollars, it starts going up around 40, 50%. You start making over about $2 million a year, and you start paying a 90% tax rate on that money. Now, on the first, you know, 100,000 or first, you know, little bit, you're paying much lower tax rates. But everything over a couple million dollars a year, you're going to have to pay 90% tax on. And as a result of that, companies and people, I mean, we had the average CEO throughout the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, and even into the very early 80s, average CEO is making 30 times, 40 times at the most what his or her lowest paid employees were making. And it's nuts. I mean, it's gone over the edge. Dale, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. It's 27 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
fine day. I hear the voices rising, starting with a whisper like it did before. Day by day, we count the dead and dying, ship the bodies home, while an inward talk keeps going. Did you hear him talking about it on the radio?
There you go. Welcome back, my friends. 25 minutes before the hour. Telling the truth that the multinational corporations would really rather you didn't know about. Tom Hartman here with you. Every now and then, you just find the most amazing things, you know?
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync. You think that you're out of your mind. Everything you know is wrong.
Yeah, could be. Or actually, I suspect a lot of folks are going to listen to this and go, ha, makes perfect sense to me. This is from Audney Reader, actually, and it's a story about something that happened down in Brazil. A creative, it's called Sex or Guns, You Choose. That's the poster. A creative gun buyback program in Brazil has met with surprising success using a bit of clever psychology. The gun control group Viva Rio ran an ad campaign designed to strip guns of their macho mystique, writes Sholto McPherson in the New Internationalist. The ads, which began airing in July, feature beautiful actresses using puns to compare pistols to premature ejaculation and small penises, followed by the slogan, "Say no to small arms. Choose your gun or me." By October 2005, the program had taken more than 438,000 guns out of circulation nationwide. 438,000 guys said, "What, you mean if I strut around with a gun, it's because I'm trying to compensate for something?" It reminds me, this is the holiday season, too. Reminds me of, this is a classic case. When we were doing our NLP classes here on this program back last year, and you can find the link to those classes over at TomHartman.com. If you click on the Listen Live link, it's down there toward the bottom of the page. There's a link to the archives of the audio and the transcripts that Sue Nethercutt, who runs our chat room, did. Alex. And the story I was telling you, I was traveling. It was the holiday. It was the Thanksgiving weekend, which is the busiest weekend that there is, and just absolutely, absolutely, totally insane. And I, at the time, I was doing a lot of traveling, and so I was, I had free membership and all, all these clubs and stuff. I was with Delta Airlines, a flying colonel and a million miler, still am, I guess. And so anyhow, I walk into the Delta Airlines crown room. This was probably about 10 years ago, and the country was being slammed with snow. I mean, it was just this incredible blizzard going on almost from one end to another. And I believe that I was in Cincinnati. I was trying to get home to Atlanta from the West Coast, and everything was delayed. Everything was jammed, and the crown room was chock-a-block, packed with people, every chair taken. And this was back in the days when there was a smoking section in the crown room. So I guess you can figure out the date on this. I don't know when that change happened, but like I said, it was probably at least 10 years ago. And so I walk into the crown room, and there's this one little circle with two couches and a coffee table in between and a couple of chairs around the sides of it, because it's a little talking circle thing. And there was one empty chair right on the couch, and so an empty seat. And so I went over there and I sat down, and I had just come in off this long flight from the West Coast, and I'd had a couple of glasses of wine. It had been a pretty wild ride. There was stormy weather, and the planes were bumping around, and I'm not the world's happiest flyer to begin with, and so I'd had probably a little more than I should have, let's say. And I sat down, and the guy opposite me, and I noticed this funny smell when I walked in, and the guy opposite me is dressed up in full Texas regalia, and for our listeners in Texas, I don't mean this as any kind of personal insult or anything, but this guy, he was in in cartoon Texas regalia. You know, the boots, the belt with the giant buckle, the George Bush Texas regalia. You know, the George Bush was born in Connecticut, went to prep schools in the East Coast his whole life, went to East Coast Ivy League colleges, and pretends to be a Texan. And this guy was in that kind of cartoon Texan regalia, and he's smoking this giant cigar. The cigar had to be a foot long. I mean, it was just one of the biggest cigars I've ever seen in my whole life. And we were sitting in the non-smoking section. And people around him are like, you know, shooting him dagger looks and coughing and stuff. And I didn't realize he was sitting there smoking until after I'd sat down and smoked. I used to smoke when I was younger, and I think it's made me allergic to it because I get a sore throat when I'm around it now. And so anyhow, I sat down there, and it's bothering me. It's bothering the people around me. Nobody's saying anything to the guy. The guy's just sitting there smoking his cigar and being, you know, big. I mean, this guy was like 6'2", 250 pounds. And finally, this woman who's sitting in one of the chairs just next to him, she's been coughing, and she finally speaks up. And she says to him, she says, sir, would you mind putting out the cigar or going over to the smoking section? Because I have asthma, and your cigar smoke is really starting to hurt my lungs, and it could trigger an asthma attack, which would be very, very bad for me. And, you know, he listens to her, and he takes a long pull on his cigar and points his face in her direction, blows the smoke towards her. And doesn't say anything, just, you know, kind of blows the smoke at her and just kind of grins at her like, heh. And so she gets up and she goes over and she talks to the woman who's running the crown room and who's got a line of like 9 people at her desk trying to change their flights, right, because this woman has also got a computer there. And so the woman who's running the crown room comes over and she's got a pack of Marlboros in her hand and she walks up to the guy with the cigar and she says to him, sir, you're sitting in the non-smoking section and you're smoking a cigar. And when you walk in here, there's a sign that says, please smoke in the smoking section and no cigars or pipes. And so I'm going to have to ask you to put out the cigar. And here's a pack of cigarettes. If you want to go over and sit in the smoking section, you're welcome to, you know, Marlboro's the only brand I've got here. It's what I smoke. You're welcome to them. She was very nice. And the guy looks at her sort of like he looked at the woman next to him. Takes a thoughtful puff on his cigar again, like, you know, I ain't putting this thing out, and blows the smoke out, and just gives her this look and says, call a cop, lady. And she stands there for a minute, and you can just see the wheels turning in her head, like she's trying to figure out, you know, what do I do with this guy, you know? And she glances back over at her desk, and there's like 9 people, you know, now it's like 12 people, you know, trying to change their flights because everything is delayed because of all the snow everywhere, and it's the day before Thanksgiving. And so she decides, obviously at that point, this is a battle, it's not worth fighting, and goes back to her computer. And the people sitting around me are all just like horrified. And I'm sitting there, now I should, you know, let you know, the state of Vermont at one point in time for a couple of years certified me as a psychotherapist. I went through training in neuro-linguistic programming, and I was trained by Richard Bandler as an NLP practitioner, and I'm also licensed as an NLP trainer. And NLP is like, you know, a set of communication skills. And so that kind of has to do with psychology. And so I'm sitting there almost thinking like revenge, you know, I'm going to get this guy. And I normally don't think this way. But like I said, I had a couple of glasses of wine. And I wanted to just plant an idea in this guy's head so that for the future, and this is called future pacing in NLP. So the future, whenever he pulled out a cigar, he would, you know, something would pop into his mind. And so I'm sitting there, so I lean across the table, I just kind of straighten up, and I said to him in my friendliest voice, I said, you know, I have a question, and I'll bet you know the answer to it. And he looked at me, I didn't expect him to say anything, you know, but he looked at me, you know, with that okay look on his face. And I said, in fact, I'll bet pretty much everybody in this room has the same question. Because we all had the same experience in school. I mean, we all learned the same thing in school. And I'll bet that you have an answer that I'll bet, you know, everybody sitting around this table. In fact, I'll bet probably everybody, anytime anybody sees you, they have that question. And I'll bet you know the answer to it. And I'm just so curious. I hope you don't mind my asking, a question like that. And he says, so now he's curious. So he says, well, what's the question? And I said, well, you know, we all studied a little bit of psychology in school. I mean, you know, you just kind of like social studies, you know, everybody learns at least what psychology is in high school. And so I said, probably pretty much everybody knows this, that Sigmund Freud, back in 1899, Sigmund Freud said, the larger the cigar, the smaller the penis. And I was just wondering, is that true? And this guy gives me this, you know, now you can see the look on his face, like he's trying to decide whether he's going to come over and punch my lights out. And I'm thinking, I shouldn't have had that second glass of wine. I mean, I'm debating whether I should start running. He stands up. I think I'm toast. He stands up and he walks out of the crown room, and the room bursts into applause. It was one of those moments, one little high points in my life. And so I share that with you. So anyhow, this group and Villarreal and Alex Goldmark, you worked with them down in Brazil.
I did for 7 months. Yeah,
that's amazing.
Viva Rio.
Exactly. Okay. And that's the group that did this ad campaign that basically said, hey, if you carried a gun around, it's proof. You know, the same thing as the guy with the big cigar. And all these men are responding by saying, okay, here's my gun. I don't want to be identified as one of them. And I can just see this guy now. Anytime he pulls his cigar out, he's looking around going, are they thinking that? Are they thinking that? Hopefully he quit smoking because it's good for him. You know, I did him a favor. It's 45 minutes past the hour. We'll be back. Tom Hartman here with you.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back.
They seek him here. They seek him there. His clothes are loud, but never squelched. It will make or break him, so he's got to buy the best, because he's a dedicated follower of fashion.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back, my friends. 9 minutes before the hour, the dedicated followers of fashion among the CEO world are just, their company's buying their clothes. Their company's paying for their vacations. Their company's paying for their yachts. Their company's paying for their trip. Some of the examples, this is from the Wall Street Journal today, article by Mark Marimont. Coca-Cola Bottling Company Chief Executive Frank Harrison III has received more than $4 million since 2000 to cover taxes on a big restricted stock grant. That's more than his total salary over the same period. Regions Finance Corp, a bank based in Birmingham, Alabama, last year paid $27.3 million in gross-ups, that's covering taxes, to its CEO, Jackson Moore. It's just mind-boggling. And the list goes on and on and on. $27.3 million in gross-up payments to Mr. Moore, the CEO of Regions Financial. Marvin E. Bruce, a retired Union Planters director, says he was told at the time. Now this guy is on the director of the board of one of these companies that did this, right? And so he's the one who's setting the pay for the CEO as a member of the board of directors. He says he was told at the time by a compensation consultant that paying 100% of an executive's personal taxes after changing control was, quote, not uncommon, end quote. Mr. Bruce, who was then head of the board's compensation committee, says he can't recall the consultant's name. Mm-hmm. The Wall Street Journal goes on to say several compensation experts say such a policy is rare, although it appears it's not rare among the rich and the super rich. At Ryland Group, Inc., a big home builder based in Calabasas, California, CEO Chad Dreyer has received about $12 million in gross-up payments since 2000. Other top executives at Ryland also get this benefit, amounting to an additional $5.5 million over the last 3 years. St. Louis-based Monsanto Company last year paid $26,000 in tax reimbursements on $50,000 in initiation fees so that CEO Hugh Grant could join the Bogey Club, a posh local country club founded in 1911. The board of this is all, I'm sharing this with you from an article by Mark Marimont in today's Wall Street Journal, cover story titled Latest Twist in Corporate Pay, Tax-Free Income for Executives. It's the Leona Helmsley story. Only the little people pay taxes. The board of BEA Systems A software concern in San Jose, California, earlier this year authorized a payment of as much as $600,000 to cover 4 years of taxes on a chauffeur service provided to its CEO after realizing that benefit was likely taxable to him. And it doesn't even end when you stop working if you are part of this aristocratic class. Last year, for example, the Wall Street Journal reports Unisys Corporation announced that its then-CEO, Lawrence Weinbach, would step down from that post early in 2005 and retire. Unisys agreed to cover all income taxes on his annuity payment, an extra benefit valued at $2 million. So he doesn't even have to pay taxes after he's retired on the money that he gets after he's retired. James Kiltz, the former CEO of Gillette Company, stands to receive about $13 million in gross-up payments after selling the big razor maker to Procter & Gamble Company this year, P&G says. And it just goes on and on and on. It is what Thomas Jefferson predicted. It is absolutely what Thomas Jefferson predicted. We are there. George in Jupiter, Florida on the line. Hey, George, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hey, Tom, how you doing?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up, Joel? And happy holidays, George.
Yeah, you too.
Thank you.
I just caught the tail end of Bernie earlier, and what he was saying, you know, is it like a platform as to what I guess Democrats or everyone should be saying to counter the insanity of the Republicans. I just wonder sometimes if Democrats are ever going to manage to do that and get on message, because you look at, like, Hillary Clinton's latest flag-burning insanity.
I know.
And it's like, you know, they're never going to be successful trying to be Republican light. They're not.
I agree. In fact, Harry Truman, the Democratic president, Harry Truman, said when the American voters are faced with a choice between a Republican or a Democrat who behaves like a Republican, they will choose the Republican every time.
Oh,
and,
yeah. There's
and he was right. And you know, what I have to say about, you know, Hillary and the flag burning and the whole thing, I mean, she's part of the DLC. And what you're talking about really is the whole DLC strategy of becoming Republican light. And if Hillary is the nominee for the Democratic Party in 2006, or in 2008, I will support her and I will vote for her. I'll just tell you that right up front, because I think that even a bad Democrat is better than any Republican right now.
Yeah, I agree.
But that said, what's really going on is that there is a battle inside the Democratic Party for the heart and soul of that party between the Democratic Leadership Council, the DLC, the right-wing Democrats, the corporate Democrats, and they have a lot of control over the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, by the way, which passes out money and decides who gets to run for Congress, because it decides who's going to be funded. Between that group and the progressives in the Democratic Party, people like Peter DeFazio and Earl Blumenauer, you know, my people, you know, people here in Oregon.
Howard Dean,
the progressives in the Democratic Party, John Edwards, Russ Feingold, Barbara Boxer. There's a battle between the progressives and the DLC conservatives, let's say, in the Democratic Party. And the next few years are going to tell us who wins that battle. And pretty much in my mind, regardless of who wins the battle, you and I need to stay in the fight. We need to participate. We need to show up at meetings. We need to encourage people to show up at meetings. And frankly, I say even to people who are inclined to be Republicans, start showing up at Republican Party meetings and participating in that. We need to take back rational people, good people of goodwill. You know, may have different political philosophies, need to take back these political parties because they have been hijacked by thieves and robber barons in the service of multinational corporations in both cases.
Right.
George, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. And so, you know, that's my riff in a nutshell. And I would, you know, I can't put words in Bernie's mouth, but he laid out, you know, his agenda for his reelection. And I really think it should be the agenda for the reelection of any Democrat, frankly. And for that matter, you know, half that stuff is stuff that Eisenhower used to agree with. It used to be even Republican. 57 minutes past the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to our program, my friends. Hey, Martin L. Kaiser with us. Hey, the author of Odyssey of an Eavesdropper, My Life in Electronic Countermeasures and My Battle Against the FBI. Martin, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
You and I were both ham radio operators at the age of 13.
Wow, incredible.
Yeah.
It's hard to remember that.
Indeed. That's why I threw some Morse code at you there at the beginning of CQ.
You can imagine how shocked I was when that satellite and enemy of the state started sending CQ.
Yeah.
That was really funny.
Yeah. It's, in fact, the movie, Enemy of the State, it is really weird sometimes when they do CW or Morse code on in movies and things, and they just throw out the strangest things, you know, for those of us who know how to, you know, I can probably still copy 15 or 20 words a minute.
Good grief.
WA8MWL here, in fact. Michigan's wackiest lunatic was a... your story is amazing. Your book, Odyssey of an Eavesdropper, My Life in Electronic Countermeasures, My Battle Against the FBI. And what part of that I find fascinating is the story about how you were essentially what wasn't then called, but would today be called, I suppose, a whistleblower with regard to the FBI. And they went after you for it. And another part of it is, you know, kind of the insights into that whole culture. And then the third part in particular, the last part of the book, The Future of Privacy in America, you talk about how basically we have two choices. We can either have no privacy at all or we can have no life at all. And let's take those three pieces in the 7 or 8 minutes here we'll have for this segment and just, you know, get into them. First of all, what happened with the FBI and why?
You're talking about a little battle?
Yeah.
Well, actually, I wasn't even the whistleblower. It was two investigators for the House Select Committee on Intelligence that discovered that the FBI had this phony front called U.S. Recording Company, and they were forcing small businesses like myself to sell through U.S. Recording Company, not knowing that it was owned personally by the high-level management of the FBI.
Right. The phrase you were using was pricing irregularities. I had assumed that, okay, yeah.
Yeah. So out of $25 million they ran through it, they personally pocketed $7.5 million and built a little country club out in Western Maryland called the Blue Ridge Rod and Gun Club. And
the FBI did?
Hmm?
The FBI did.
Yes. And Hoover was a frequent visitor there, but he always dressed in woman's clothing when he went there.
Seriously?
Seriously.
Yeah, no, Tony Summers is a friend of mine, the guy who wrote the biography of Hoover, you know, Private and Confidential. He amazing stories, but... So the FBI went after you on this. You were ultimately acquitted, exonerated.
Right.
But you were blackballed for decades.
Well, actually, I was blackballed basically December of 1975, which is when I testified against the FBI. And it was a very complex series of events because I wrote a speech for my appearance, and then the committee itself changed my speech and shifted it from complaining about how the Omnibus Crime Bill, which controls bugging equipment, changed it from that to beating up on the FBI, and it was a real shock. But being a neophyte, I didn't know what to do, and so I read it, and that was my official, unofficial whistleblowing.
There you go.
But
we're speaking with Martin Kaiser, MartyKaiser.com, his website, MartyKaiser.com. Odyssey of an Eavesdropper, his book, My Life in Electronic Countermeasures and My Battle Against the FBI. Marty Kaiser, to what extent do any of us in the United States have privacy anymore?
None. We just don't have privacy anymore. And
how bad is it?
It's extremely bad. The difficult part is what to do with all the intelligence these people are collecting. In my trial, after I got acquitted, the two FBI agents sued me for $22 million, claiming I caused a mental anguish. And as a result of that action, I got all my FBI files. And in the midst of all of those, they had me in five places at exactly the same time. So I said, well, the government will tell you I was there. I will tell you I was there. My passport will show I was there. And I said, get rid of the other four. And they said, well, we can't do that. So that's the problem with all this eavesdropping. They just collect mountains of data, and maybe one of them is right, and other ones can be used to build virtually any scenario against any American in the country.
Well, this is one of the big problems that people who are victims of identity theft face right now.
Precisely.
Is that it can take years to nobody is contesting any part of it to get their records cleaned up.
Yeah.
And that's just the public records with corporations, which brings up my second question, and that is, You talk in large part in the book about you know, government spying on people. But increasingly, our government now, particularly under the Bush administration, has been outsourcing that spying to private corporations so that they won't have to comply with things like Freedom of Information Act filings and other constitutional and legal guarantees that are in place to preserve privacy. Which do you see now as the greater threat to American privacy and to our not living in a police state, the police state or the corporate part of the police state?
Going back to my early stages in the so-called spy business, warrants were required, of course, for wiretaps. And the way that you can do a warrantless wiretap for 90 days. So what they would do when their 90, the agency that put the wiretap on would use up their 90 days, they call up a friend in another police agency and say, we're going to kick it over to you. And they kick it over there, and in 90 days they kick it on to the next guy. So warrantless wiretaps were going on for years and years and years on some people without any warrants. So basically, we have the same thing going on right now in a slightly different technical fashion, where the government doesn't want to get caught doing it, so they kick it to private industry. And now you can buy so many programs on the Internet to invade other people's computers yourself, personally. You can send in information that says, give me all those keystrokes, give me this, give me that, and everything.
Sure.
And these are available.
Key trap software.
$200 or $300 on the web.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, they're marketing them aggressively. They're saying, do you want to know what your husband or wife are doing on their PC?
Right.
I mean, that's the overt marketing, but stalkers are using them, hackers are using them, companies are using them to monitor their employees.
Right. And now this latest thing where they're tracking cell phones, it's just inconceivable. They even know where you are to a matter of a few feet. So,
in the United Kingdom, I've spent a lot of time in England over the years, and I remember back, it seems like it must have been about 20 years ago, you've spent a fair amount of time that you probably would know more precisely than me. They first introduced these cameras at stoplights and things to catch people who were running red lights and speeding. And there was a big uproar, and people were shooting at the cameras or sabotaging them. There aren't so many guns over there, but they were sabotaging them and things like that. And then when they started out, they had to have film in them, and they had to load them and unload them, and it was problematic and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But over time, the British became comfortable with them.
Right.
And then more cameras appeared, And it was always in the context of, we've got to do this to make sure that, to catch people who are breaking the law with regard to traffic. Now this week, the UK comes out and they say they're using this network of cameras nationwide now to feed into a giant database. The cameras are now looking at license plate numbers, and they now can tell where your car is, where every car in the country is at all times, 24/7, henceforth now, forever, world without end, amen.
Right.
The Big Brother has landed in Great Britain. The Brits have become so accustomed to this that the response is, oh, are we heading in that direction here in the United States?
Yeah. Well, the problem with that British system is there's a little part they don't tell you about. They can recognize your license plate, but they also have face recognition software.
So they recognize you, too.
Right. So they're looking at your license plate, they're looking at your face, and they say, well, these two go together, so you're a good guy. If they find the wrong person driving the car, you have another problem. So they're even the face recognition stuff now. And, of course, the NSA has been great on voice recognition.
Right.
I don't know if you're familiar with RFID chips.
Sure.
They stick them in cows' jaw to keep track of their cows.
Yeah.
Things like that. And I just see it, our society going that route where everybody's going to have an RFID.
Well, this piece of legislation that passed earlier this year, the Real ID Act, has a provision in it that RFID chips can be put into driver's licenses, including biometric data. So if commercial retailers use this, you walk by a store, it says, well, hello, Mr. Kaiser.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that world of the movie Tom Cruise was in.
Right. And the CIA has been trying to get contactless DNA for the longest time, trying to figure it out. And then this 9/11 stuff handed it to them. Now they have this thing, this phone booth you walk into, and it sucks your vapors up.
There you go. And they've got it. Yeah. Marty Kaiser, we have about 20 seconds left. What can people do about this?
We got to get rid of that Patriot Act. That is the worst thing going. And I don't know if that's going to cure the ills, but trying to get our privacy back is just...
It's a start.
Tough thing.
It's a start. We have to. My take on it is, we just have to start waking up Americans.
Right.
I mean, if we don't wake up enough people,
right.
I salute you for the work that you're doing in that regard. The book is Odyssey of an Eavesdropper, Absolutely remarkable story. My life in electronic countermeasures and my battle against the FBI. The website, Marty, M-A-R-T-Y, Kaiser, K-A-I-S-E-R.com. Marty Kaiser, thanks for being with us today.
Okay. Thank you, Tom.
I appreciate
Thank
it. Good talking with you.
Okay.
73.
Right. They have 73s.
There you go.
What's your call? W-A-8?
It used to be W-A-8-M-W-L. It's expired.
Okay.
Talk to you later.
Right. Take care, Tom.
It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 16 minutes past the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
On the ninth day of Bushmas, my president gave to me a Bill of Rights. Not for gays or blacks or free speech, not for none of these, but for health insurance companies.
Indeed.
On the tenth day of Bushmas, my president gave to me cheaper public schools, cloning corporate tools, teaching to the test, screwing all the rest. If they don't like our new federal standardization of their kids to work in faith-based health insurance companies. On the just five more. On the 11th day of Bushmas, my president gave to me a war against somebody over in someplace. To teach a lesson and save our face, taking your 300 and your fuzzy feeling and your Bill of Rights. Here we go to war. I think we all know what it's for. To defend our lack of a democracy.
There you go. Welcome back, my friends. It's 22 minutes past the hour. Do you know where your democracy is? Indeed. Welcome back to the program. The place where it, being progressive never felt so good. 1-866-440-8466, 440-THOM, our telephone number. Dave in Eureka, California on the line. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. I had hoped to get through before Marty left because I think I'm one of the people that he's speaking of. And
I think we all are.
Well, yeah, I certainly can relate to his message. And a lot of what we're hearing right now today of how the president's kind of openly admitting that he can and does tap into whoever he chooses under the guise that we're terrorists. I can assure you I am not a terrorist. I did, however, expose one big major corporate government corruption fraud, and I did manage to make some serious enemies in government. In a short period of time, I went from being a rather successful mental health professional to being several hundred thousand dollars in debt.
Ouch. You're a psychologist, right, Dave?
Yes, uh-huh. I ran residential care programs, and you can relate to that, and they were very excellent ones. But I am never allowed a moment alone on a computer, and the people I've assigned to hack me like to flaunt the fact that they're there. They like to let me know. They like to keep turning the computer on and off.
You know, Dave, there are people who hear that, and they think this is nutty stuff. I got to tell you that when I started doing Progressive Talk Radio almost 3 years ago, I started this program, and it was on the iAmerica Radio Network, and we were living in Vermont. And after about a week and a half on the air, our telephones in our house, whenever I would be having a conversation with somebody, I could hear somebody breathing in the background. And if I pointed it, and I mean breathing like...
They like to let you know.
You know, just, yeah, it was so conspicuous. And if I would, and if I mentioned it, or if the person on the other end mentioned it, then it would get louder. And this went on for, I'd say, at least a month with every call. And my initial thought was that my next door neighbor, because I had a wireless phone, had the same kind of wireless phone, and he was able to listen in on my calls. You know, that whenever my phone rang, his phone rang, and he would just pick it up and listen in. And so I went down to Radio Shack and I bought a 12 buck, you know, one of these little throwaway wired phones, you know, and plugged it in. And the next time the phone rang, picked it up, and there was the guy breathing again. It wasn't the wireless phone. And then it finally went away. It went away after a month or so, and you know now they're not sticking their nose and thumbing their nose at me anymore. But there's no doubt in my mind. I don't think I'm paranoid. I mean, that was a real experience.
Well, I find them confident enough that they feel they can get away with damn near anything. They'd like to know, can I intimidate you? Can I don't want to.
Yeah, this
know
was the second year of the Bush administration when this happened to me.
There's something else. This is totally out of control, and I hope that a lot of people, that they come out and be aware that I assume if it's happening to me, it's happening to a number of other people.
Yeah. Yeah. Dave, thanks a lot for the call and for raising the issue. I appreciate it. It's always good to hear from you. 1-866-440-THOM, our telephone number. Charisse, and is it Polesbo, Washington? Charisse? Maybe we have lost Charisse. Oh, you got her back? Let's try it again. Charisse in Polesbo, Washington?
Yes.
Hey, Charisse, you're alive and on the air. I can.
Hi.
And we don't hear any funny breathing in the background either.
No. I just had a little bit of what I consider good news for the holidays. I was watching Now on PBS last weekend, and they were doing a story about all these super uber wealthy millionaires who have been petitioning Bush since November to not make the tax cuts permanent. They're saying, we don't need the money, don't do it.
Right. But those are not, unfortunately, those are not the people who make campaign contributions to Bush, because you've got the Mars family heirs, and you've got the Waltons, actually. The Walton family heirs were the ones who were the leading funders of the battle to do away with the inheritance tax, for example.
Have you seen
some big
the website? It's called Responsible Wealth.
Oh, yeah. It's Chuck Collins' website.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
they were interviewing Mr. Whitehead, and he said, I fear that this is 1929 all over again.
It is.
We don't need
very
the money.
Much
don't give us the tax cuts. And,
yeah.
And the website's amazing. And I thought it was good news to know that some of the wealthy people out there have a conscience and common sense and are trying to do something about it.
You're right. It is. And Chuck Collins and Bill Gates Sr. wrote a marvelous book about it, the title of which is escaping me. But it was one of my BuzzFlash recommended books of the month. So if you look at any of my books of the month and click on archives, you can find it.
Okay.
Something about wealth in America, although that's Kevin Phillips. And, there are people out there saying that, and there's a lot of them. The tragedy is that none of them are Republican contributors, so the Republicans don't listen to them. But the Democrats are, and hopefully we'll see some changes. Charisse, thanks for the good news.
Thank you.
Great to hear from you, and happy holidays to you and your family. It's 27 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And happy holidays, my friends. Welcome back. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Kwanzaa coming up here. Happy Yule to the pagans among us. Or joyous Yule. What is it? Blessed be. I'm not a pagan. I don't know the phrase. Anyhow, welcome back to our program. 34 minutes past the hour, coming up 25 minutes before the hour. The program where we run rings around the right wing every single day, thanks to the folks in our chat room, also known as the other half of my brain, for reminding me that the book by Chuck Collins and William H. Gates Sr., Bill Gates Sr., that I was talking about is titled Wealth and Our Commonwealth. It was published in December of 2004. And, in fact, Chuck Collins has been on this program a couple of times, talking about that and that book and other issues like that. And they've got a whole website and foundation and all kinds of cool stuff about responsible wealth and in general. I gotta tell you, by the way, before the show is out, about Anthony Principe, or maybe it's Principe, I'm not sure which, the Veterans Affairs Secretary, Principe, just stepped down earlier this month. And it looks like there was no reason given for his departure. It looks like the reason is starting to come out. And it doesn't look good. Doesn't look good for the United States. Doesn't look good for the Bush administration. And I'll share that with you in a few minutes. Our telephone number, 1-866-440-8466. If you want to drop into our live chat room, even if this is Sunday and you're listening to the replay of the program on Sunday, you can drop by the live chat room. There's usually somebody there. Say hi. Go to TomHartman.com and just click on the live chat link. It'll get you in there. Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico. Hey, Roy, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Tom, and I know with your family in town, you're going to have a great holiday season.
It's wonderful. My son has flown in from Georgia, and our two daughters live here in Portland, and we're all going to be together. And I'm missing the rest of my extended family back in Michigan, but I'm going to try and get back there in the next month or so to see them. So. I hope all is well with you, Roy, and you're with family and friends.
Oh, you bet. And I want to give you a stroke for the Christmas presents you give us all year long.
Well, thank
now,
you, sir. You're
very
kind.
Now, I just hope that the judge here in New Mexico will give the lawsuit group our Christmas present.
Okay, give our listeners 15 seconds of background on this, Roy.
Two or three days ago, a group here in New Mexico who is suing the Secretary of State and various county clerks requested a temporary injunction to ban the county clerks from spending money on the Sequoia touchscreen machines because they are not functional.
Or not reliable.
Not reliable.
They function quite well, apparently. That's the problem.
actually, one of the main points of my call, because I wanted to kind of get this out. I think I emailed you, or you saw it on the chat board a couple days ago or something. As of this morning, when I Googled New Mexico and voter machines, the only 11 hits that I got were based on the press release. And it was Brad Blog, Voter Action, various sites.
So there's basically a news blackout on this thing.
Not one New Mexico newspaper that I could tell reported it.
Holy cow.
Now that to me is just, it's almost mind-blowing.
Have you called your local newspaper and asked them why
they're
not covering it?
I haven't. It's on my list here. Because I am.
Let me suggest that you call them after we finish this phone call or after we get off the air or whatever time is convenient for you today.
Right.
And then on Monday, I'll be back here live on the air on Monday. And, give me a call. Let me know what happened. Let us all know what happened.
That just staggered me. And I saw it this morning and it was like, okay, I got to do this before the weekend gets here.
Yeah.
But this whole thing, going back to what Marty was talking about, the voting part of Help America Vote Act requires this the Secretary of State's of building new voter base databases, and the vast majority of them are being done
by private companies.
Private companies, Lockheed or not Lockheed? Is it Lockheed Marietta that is
Martin Marietta
Data, whatever. I mean,
yeah.
One of the things that you might periodically recommend is that people go to, like, Brad Blog or somebody and go up and link to the audio of that wonderful conference that was up in Portland a couple months ago because I...
Yeah, I spoke at that conference. It was great.
I know. But I went up and listened to all of the audio.
The best speech that was given was the one Bob Petrakis gave. I thought that was brilliant. But
the whole... of course, I was paying attention to Holly that came down here that's involved in New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Situation. And even though we're talking about New Mexico, little bitty old New Mexico, if our lawsuit, and I say our lawsuit, it's almost, I view it as part of the commons now. If the group that is suing to get these machines banned succeed, that will set precedent around the country. It's already starting to have blowback around the country. And so even though it's little New Mexico, hopefully we can get the word out.
Yeah, for sure. What you are doing, Roy, I mean, I'm just so impressed by what you are doing. I mean, actually getting out there.
Not me personally. It's the other folks. I'm just kind of, it's kind of exciting to be involved in it, Tom.
There you go.
Even if it's only peripherally.
There you go.
You know, it's kind of like, hey, I went to school with that kid, and look how great he's doing.
There you go. You're doing the good work.
Excitement just being associated with it. And so I guess that's one of the reasons that I keep calling in and kind of talking about that stuff.
Yeah.
Anybody that's listening that feels frustrated, get out and do something.
There you go.
Because then all of a sudden something becomes something.
There you go.
Something becomes more.
Well said, right. Roy, I got to move along, but I appreciate your comments, and please let me know what happened. Will you call me back and let me know what happens when you contact some of your local media?
You betcha.
Okay, thanks. Good talking to you, Roy. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Bob in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you very much. I was listening in my car running some errands, and I heard you talking to another person on the call in, and they were talking about, you were talking about phones being tapped.
I told my strange story. In fact,
yeah.
Yeah, my wife beat me and said, you know, you're sounding like a paranoid here. But it actually happened, you know. So it's one of those stories that you tell people, and sometimes they're not quite sure, you know, what's going on with this guy. So I usually don't tell that story.
Well, I'm an old man now, but in my youth, I have what's called a checkered past.
Mm-hmm.
And I would pick up the phone, and the same thing would happen. And so we used to play games, and we'd say, you know, make up some fictitious code. Rover, rover, send somebody right over.
Yeah.
Yeah, it meant nothing.
Uh-huh.
They sure thought it meant something.
Uh-oh.
My question was, how do you know, or do you know, that it was the government, or was do you think it was a possibility of some right-wing wacko group?
Oh, to this day, I don't know. As I said, my initial guess was that it was my next-door neighbor.
Oh, right, yeah.
And you know, and the guy was just being a jerk.
Yeah.
Because I did have a next-door neighbor who was a little odd.
Yeah.
But I had another next door neighbor who was, you know, really decent guy, and I didn't think it was him, and so now my two neighbors are both scratching their heads going, is he talking about me? But in any case, that was my assumption. I mean, even though, you know, it was just after 9/11 and the whole world was weird, and everything, that was my assumption. And to this day, I frankly have no idea. I just don't know. It might have been, I might have been some weird coincidence. It might have been some, who knows? I just don't know. And, well, you know, and frankly, I mean, there's the first week or so, it kind of flipped me out. And then you just kind of reach a point where it's like, you know, am I going to get on with my life or not? You know, and I decided I'm going to get on with my life. It's the same thing. It's like I went to the dentist's office the other day, and they hand me these forms to fill out. We moved out here to Oregon in April, and so this is my first visit to a dentist since I've lived here in Oregon. And they hand me the forms to fill out, and, you know, have you ever had a disease, and have you ever had, you know, and what teeth are out, and all this, you know, medical history, right?
Yeah.
And you fill out all this stuff, and do you have asthma, and have you ever had an abortion, and blah, blah, you know, the 300 different questions that they ask. And you get down to the very end, and there's like this 6 paragraphs of fine print, and one of the paragraphs says, we reserve the right to release your confidential medical information to anybody for any purpose at any time under any circumstances whatsoever at our sole discretion.
Whoa.
I went over to the receptionist. Actually, I said it rather loudly. There were about 3 people sitting in the room. And I went over to the receptionist and I said, you know, what's the deal with this language? And she looked at it and she says, we had to put that in starting about a year ago. The insurance companies required it or they won't pay. She says, if you don't want to sign it, that's fine. You don't have to sign it, and we will, you know, guarantee you the privacy of your records. But your insurance company will refuse to pay for any of your dental work. And I have insurance that covers my dental work. And so I signed the thing. And I since have talked with physician friends of mine, same deal. That language is now, if you go to see a doctor or a dentist, you're going to have to sign that language.
Weird.
And the insurance companies are cross-covering this information, and you know, from car insurance companies are looking at medical histories, looking for psychiatric histories.
Yeah.
Health insurance companies are looking for, I mean, all this information is going into giant databanks, and now even credit companies are starting to look at things like medical histories to determine whether or not you're going to be a decent credit risk, because are you going to be healthy, how long are you going to be that healthy, all these kinds of things. I mean, it's absolutely, it's like, you know, welcome to Big Brother's brave new world here.
Oh yeah.
And that is, and again, you know, it's like, am I sounding paranoid? No, this is reality. Welcome to America in 2005. Bob, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you, and glad you're listening there in KTPK. It's 45 minutes past the hour. Do you know where your democracy is? I'm Tom Hartman. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. Happy holidays to you. And thanks so much to my producer, David Poole, to Louise Hartman, to Alex Goldmark, Dan Jacobs over at Air America, to Ben and Shelby, Ben at WhiteRoseSociety.org, Shelby at RadioPower.org, streaming our program. to Sue Nethercutt and the folks in our chat room, to Mike Toth, who does our audio archives on our website, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for listening to our program. Thank you, and happy holidays. I hope it's a wonderful, wonderful, truly wonderful time for you with family and friends. Our phone number, 866-440-8466. And Cecilia in Winter Park, Florida, on the line. Hey, Cecilia, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I hope I don't sound too funky. I've been battling with some kind of bug going around.
It's going around here, too. So.
Yeah, well, not fun. But, you know, Still standing's better than the alternative.
There you go.
Anyway, first of all, I wanted to call and wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy Holiday and a great New Year.
Thank you.
We are blessed to have you. You are just... You're just America's gift, and I want to thank you for all that you do.
Well, thank you. It's very sweet of you. There's a lot of good people doing this kind of work, and I'm honored to be among them.
Yes, well, we're honored to have you. Anyway, I don't want to be too down. I'm a hospice nurse. I do pediatric and adult hospice, and when I haven't had time to fully digest it yet, but I am gravely concerned about the so-called budget deficit reduction package.
Yeah, they just took a couple billion dollars out of the Medicaid payments that will be going to people like you.
Yeah, well, it's not just me. I mean, believe it or not, as a registered nurse for over 25 years, I've taken a pay cut in Bush World because they no longer pay time and a half for over 40 hours or for holidays.
Yeah,
really and truly.
Yeah, no, I know. I remember when they changed the law.
Right.
It was like two years ago, wasn't it?
Right. So, you know, we've taken a pay cut, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. But most importantly, I've taken care of, there was a lady who was really end stage, and she was vomiting and febrile. And under the guidelines, they had to discontinue hospice care because they considered her stable. And she passed away 2 days later, and her husband has been putting off prostate cancer treatment to help deal with his wife. And if it's that bad now, God help all of us.
Yeah.
And I guess the best thing we could do, not that it's going to do any good, is to contact our House of Representatives.
The best thing that we can do, Cecilia, is to join the Democratic Party. And not that I think that the Democratic Party are knights in shining armor and some, you know, great salvation thing, but I think that it has the potential to be that once again, like it was when Franklin Roosevelt was president, if enough people like you and me start participating.
Well, I'm already there, and I've already got big political plans for grassroots activities in 06. I'm part of a political committee, and we are active. And
get out there and get active. Because, you know, as a talk show host, I'm not joining a particular political party. I send $5 a year to the Republican Party so that I stay on their mailing list, which no doubt someday... Yeah, and someday, no doubt, there will be on some right-wing publication, Hartman's a secret spy. He gives money to the Republicans, right? So, you know, in advance. And I contribute to Democratic candidates, and I do a lot of volunteer work for the Democratic Party and for Democratic candidates here in Oregon. But I have to be able to say I'm an independent, at least in my own mind. I mean, just to have that talk show host integrity.
Right.
But I am very clear that and this is the same thing Bernie Sanders will tell you, by the way, who is an independent officially. That if we don't take back, progressives don't take back the Democratic Party, because we do live in a two-party country, if we don't take back the Democratic Party and move it forward in a progressive direction, we are going to have, it is going to get worse. And this thing that you're describing, even worse, and we've got to change that. Cecilia,
well,
I got to move along. I got
okay,
a bunch
Sanders
more callers in just a couple minutes.
In 06.
There you go.
Happy holidays. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot. And you can find out more about that by going to Bernie.org, by the way. Jim in Maple Valley, Washington. Hey, Jim.
Hi there. How you doing?
Great. What's up?
Wanted to wish you a Merry Christmas, number one.
Well, thank you. Merry Christmas to
I've
you, too.
I've been listening to your program this morning and the deal about the phone tapping and wiretapping and such, and I've had some experiences that both via the phone and email that are kind of weird. I'm a Vietnam veteran, a combat Marine, served over there in 69 and part of 70, and we used to have a saying over there, and it went... just because you're paranoid doesn't mean there isn't someone out to get you.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, you being a vet, I don't want to forget to say this, so let me just interrupt you right here for a second and say this because we really only have about a minute and a half left. It turns out this, by Bob Nichols, Project Censored Award winner, Preventative Psychiatry Newsletter just released this story that the real reason why Principe stepped down from the VA is that he knows and the VA knows that depleted uranium is the definitive cause of Gulf War Syndrome. And we're looking at, out of the 580,400 soldiers who served in the first Gulf War, 11,000 are now dead. By the year 2000, there were over 325,000 of those 580,000 soldiers on permanent medical disability. And 56% of the soldiers who've served, we had a 5% disability rate out of World War II. We had a 10% disability rate out of Vietnam, 56% out of the first Gulf War. And heaven only knows what's coming out of this Gulf War. And Precipi was aware of this fact as far back as 2000, according to this article in Preventative Psychiatry Newsletter. And, I mean, this is explosive.
Amazing, huh?
Yeah. So, Jim, thanks for the call. And
you bet.
Just,
I'll cut it short here. And again, have a good holiday and Semper Fi.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. I can't say Semper Fi. I'm not a Marine. Different branch. But anyhow, it's a. Carla in Crescent City, you're going to have the last word here, Carla. We have just a few seconds left. What's up?
Well, good morning, Tom. Happy holidays.
Thank you, and the same to you.
Thank you. I saw something on the news out of Medford, Oregon, which is southern Oregon, and I didn't get all the details, but I guess there was, like, some guy who was being held for eco-terrorism.
Yeah, and he committed suicide in his jail cell.
Suicide. Convenient, yeah. Isn't it?
Well, it happens a lot. I mean, you know, jails and prisons are not pleasant places, and they're particularly not pleasant places if you are on the wrong side of an issue.
Yeah,
and
I guess
so.
Someone who's willing to break the law for their beliefs doesn't seem like the kind of person who would necessarily off themselves just because they got caught. You know?
Could be. I just don't know, Carla. And hopefully there'll be an investigation. Carla, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you, and happy holidays. Thanks. Bye now. We'll see you on Monday. Don't forget, activism begins with you. Tag, you're it.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.